Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Gaga Extreme.
Pay attention to what you include in the review copy. People love to go digging through files.
Don't read me, .txt.
Yeah, please do not read this.
Don't hit the red button.
Don't open this .txt. It'd be amazing.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gaga Extreme, and this is episode 235, and I'm joined by Dan Q.
H-E-L-L spells hello.
Makalua.
WTF spells something.
The Mean Team.
I'm a born conqueror.
And Medjin.
K-E-L-L-O.
I don't think you're ready for my jelly.
One of us should say what W2F stands for, and it means way too funny.
No. Yeah.
I don't know why you say that out loud, Mackie.
Oh, it starts with what and the. I think you can all figure out the last word without me swearing.
No way. We're just Google way it. Too funny. Yeah.
Maybe I should also open the chat thingy live stream. Is it on YouTube, or can someone give me the link? The live stream is not available in your country due to rights issues. Sorry about that.
That's a
What the hell? What?
You're in
Guten
Germany.
Tag. Welcome to Germany. We can't do live streams.
Yeah, YouTube live streams are not allowed in Germany.
Why?
That is against the Ordnung. We can't allow that. 999. That is not possible.
Actually, I mean, the hilarious thing is that you're able to be on the live stream. You just can't listen to the live stream.
Oh my god.
Episode 234 feedback. By that, I mean, yes, episode 234 of this show. I suppose we could find another show's 234th episode and comment on it, but we won't.
Next episode of Dragon Ball Z.
On the 2K forums, Fenhorn, let's start with the more negative, more controversial. Quite boring to listen to, and some of you always end all sentences in negativity. I didn't listen to the end for said reason, so perhaps it got better.
Ow.
All sentences.
All sentences.
That's going to be hard to upkeep. That's rough. The pressure is on now.
My response to that was, I take it you're referring to our coverage of Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide. I'm unclear about this negativity that you are referencing, though. If you'd be willing to elaborate, I and my fellow co-hosts would have a better understanding of your concern. Because that was the big thing. I read that and I thought, I really don't know what it is that you're talking about. Can you define it? Can you give us examples? The response. Every time, not only in this episode, someone mentions a new feature, the same person most often, or someone else that cuts in, mentions how bad this is or how bad this can be. Most of you use it for amusement as a pun of a joke. The problem is that the same rhetoric is used by trolls and haters on forums and chats. I have simply heard and seen enough of that. I used to listen a lot to you a couple of years ago. Times change, I guess. We all have to move on, some sooner than others.
Aww.
Before I could respond, Bruno Prado Santos, past guest on the show, said, I disagree. They're constantly talking about what they do like, too. I think the show would be boring without the qualified criticism the panel is able to provide, and would likely add less to the community since less people would listen and disagree and think about why they're disagreeing.
Yeah, we're not a fanboy podcast. You're going to hear things that we disagree with.
Yeah, and we all have a lot of experience playing both Civ and somewhat to Beyond Earth and strategy games in general, because we play other things too. And it's just this inherent thing that when we see a feature, even if we like the feature, we kind of go to automatically, how is somebody going to exploit that? Because we know somebody will. And we want to see it balanced so that everybody can enjoy it and not have five people who know how to use this weird exploit and win all the games or something, you know?
And even when we all have that same goal of balancing, and I think for the most part we're looking for things to be balanced, what our interpretation of balanced is can also lead to criticism. So we end up criticizing the criticism. Oh boy.
We critique our own criticisms is what we're saying.
Exactly.
Maybe not balanced, but making sure things work. Because sometimes.
Well, yeah, we need function before balance. That's true.
Before Civ 5 came out, there were Civ 5 wish lists, and there would be great ideas that sound great on paper, but if you try to think about how those would play out in practice, were not so great.
And then there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of bad ideas.
Yes. Exactly. You know, we're not critiquing for the sake of critiquing. It's just that that's what we are. We're a critique podcast, not a everything is awesome podcast.
You know, I wonder what our percentage. I wonder what our percentage of features we like is versus like the amount of viable features to implement in a game overall is.
I don't think we've complained too much about the policy tree, except for like specific changes and things like that. And
how you gain culture.
Yeah, I mean, we like it. We work with it. We find ways to make it work for us.
I mean, it's okay.
I guess we are just a bit disappointed in some areas.
So. Yes. We wouldn't still be playing Civ 5 this many years later if we didn't like the game.
And I could see sometimes when we would get into a particular discussion, we might make reference to things or have things left go unsaid because we talked about it in previous episodes, but we don't explicitly say that even. And I don't know if this is the case with Fenhorn. I don't think so, because he said he used to listen to us a lot a couple of years ago. But maybe that impression, if you just listen to an episode here or there, out of the context of more episodes, you might be like, oh, well, I didn't understand that you talked about this before, or you talked about that before in that way. And you could make the argument, well, you should reiterate everything every time, except at a certain point, it's going to be repetitive. We're going to be spending a lot of time talking about what we talked about before, not able to bring things in. I don't even know if that's what he's going for, but I'm just also trying to understand how we got that impression in the first place. But I did tell him, I'm sorry you feel that way, and I thank you for articulating your position, and I hope that you'll return to listening to the show in not too distant future, at least on occasion. Although I didn't add this in here, if you're listening to a topic, our coverage of Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, and you're getting annoyed, you could skip ahead. It's one of the reasons why we have detailed show notes. Remember, past people are like, I hate the banter at the beginning and the end. You're too silly. It's not serious enough. Get to the discussion. Well, that's why we have those timestamps, so you can move about, or if you don't like Beyond Earth Rising Tide coverage and you just want Civ 5 coverage, then you can skip to those parts that we actually talk about those things. But we also had a comment from Defiant Mars, who first posted on the YouTube. On the YouTubes.
Oh.
In response, then copied it over to CFC. He said, my discovery of this podcast is rather recent, so I've been listening to a number of them. I had a lot of fun listening to this one, however. It felt like the topics flowed together fairly well, and I just said, you could interpret your second sentence as having fun listening to episodes is the exception. Uh-huh. Tongue-in-cheek. And he's like, okay, the better way to word it would be, I enjoyed this episode more than I did many of the others. But he went on to say that on the content specifically, I find it appropriate that nearly every comment that was made about improving Civilization V's diplomacy echoes the changes that were being seen developed with Rising Tide. Based on the video information that I've seen about Rising Tide, the praise system discussed sounds like the respect system being introduced. It seemed like the AI will improve or disapprove of various actions based on what traits they have. So I found it amusing to no end that you talked about BE diplomacy in the first half of the podcast and then basically talked about a potential iteration of the same system. I mean, BE's current pre-Rising Tide system is essentially that of Civ 5, so it makes sense that some of the same issues persist. P.S. Alex must die. my response to that was, I would say that BE's pre-RT diplomatic system is a fraction of Civ 5's, though much of the latter tends to be luxury resource selling and bartering. It's not yet clear if what is to be introduced in Beyond Earth with Rising Tide goes as far as the praise system proposal and to what extent trade choices have with diplomatic interaction. That said, there are undoubted parallels, and perhaps the praise system can have some of the impact on what Civvert brings forward diplomacy-wise. And then Defiant Mars essentially said in response, in any case, I'm very excited for the Rising Tide. And so are we, because we're going to be talking a lot more about it for some reason.
Port on 2K informs us that with the Windows 10 launch upon us, they're getting a lot of questions about what's going to be supported and what's not. So far, their list of games not supporting Windows 10 is a lot longer. Mm-hmm. But what will support Windows 10 is Borderlands pre-sequel, Evolve, and XCOM 2. And they do note that just because it's not supporting Windows 10 doesn't mean it's not going to run fine on Windows 10. And that includes Beyond Earth and Rising Tide and Civ 5 and all the things, and the first XCOM, and the original Borderlands and Borderlands 2.
Yeah, the weird thing about this list is I'm pretty sure they have more games than this.
Yeah, this is just only what they listed, though.
Yes, those are the things they've tried on Windows 10 and realized that it's like,
yeah,
nope.
Or the ones they've had requests about.
Yeah.
All this stuff that's making them money, let's put it that way.
Well, they still have GTA. The only thing that annoys me on this list is Burt. XCOM not supporting Win 10, fine, whatever. It's done. They're working on XCOM 2. Civ 5 not working on 10, or at least not
supported.
Makes
sense. They're done with that.
They're done with that. Borderlands 2, yeah, they're done with that. But they're still currently working on BERT.
maybe it's past the point where they can make the changes for Windows 10? Or because
yeah, it's an engine issue. Oh, but,
yeah, that's the other thing. If it was based off some of the Civ 5 code and they carried that over, maybe that's part of the problem with it supporting Windows 10.
But yeah, I assume if they had the capability to carry it over, they would do it just for Beyond Earth and Civ 5, considering they are using mostly the same engine and the same code, or similar code.
By this point, even the engine's been changed a bit. But the thought line on that is, Beyond Earth Rising Tide hasn't even been released yet. And if it follows the usual Civ titles, there will be yet another expansion sometime down the line, provided this doesn't tank the whole idea. See? Ending on a negative. There you go.
Imagine does it again.
Aww. Because that not is in capitals, italic. It just feels like they're not even going to bother to try. And while I can see that, yeah, okay, maybe right now it might not be a thing that they can do, but you would assume that since it's new, that maybe after they launch, they would go, okay, how does this work on Win 10? And can we?
Yeah.
This was published on the 28th of July. 2K Micta says, we will be updating this list as more information becomes available. So not only do I think just Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide should not be on the list one way or the other, and arguably even Civilization Beyond Earth. With the expansion pack, we could very well see that perhaps something will happen with the base game as well, since they're kind of in that, as it were. I would just be leaving that off, and I would be updating that list closer to release with regards to Civilization Beyond Earth, especially when they say we'll be updating this list with more information as more information becomes available.
And even if they don't do it for Rising Tide, if they go what they've been doing, a second expansion like they did for Civ 5, at that point they may look into Windows 10 compatibility.
Or we get a new patch.
Yeah.
But it being in there, considering it's in development, but it's based on something from before, I mean, yeah, leaving it off the list until they know one way or another, or they decide one way or another, would be good. Because otherwise, if you look at the list, except for that one, it's stuff that's coming out or very, very recent. And then there's stuff that's been out for more than a year. Yeah, Birch just that weird one in the middle, and it annoys me that they threw that in the knot when they very well could just do a little testing. Now, granted, when it comes to Win 10, the chances of them making it work with DX12, that's probably going to be a knot, because they already have Mantle and involvement in that, and that would require probably a much, much bigger change to make it DX12 compatible versus just actually running on Windows 10.
Now, the buzzing notes in the chat, I have not noticed any issues with the transition to Windows 10, and there is an option to roll back to your previous version for a month after the upgrade if you upgrade and do have Civ issues. I just have to say as an aside, I enjoy your phrasing because, well, if you have Civ issues, then you need to roll back, but if you have other issues, don't worry about it. You know, we wouldn't have these issues if Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide was included with Windows 10 upon release. No, kidding.
I think that's a rather strong statement to make, actually. Well, I don't think you'll need Windows 10 support for this one. Brexicon 2015, yes, that's going to be in Baltimore on October 3rd. Some of us will be in attendance. I will not.
I will be there.
I will not be there. There is no mechanism with my employer for me to be able to be there. Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. That's the same thing for me. It's just, it's at a time of year where I can't swing it.
Yeah, and I understand development cycle. This is when things are good for them. And hey, that's fine. They're the ones that are putting on the event. For me, if it was July and August, that would be awesome. That's a great window. But in my case, it's either the window is completely open or it's essentially completely closed. So, But on the positive side, as compared to the inaugural Firaxicon, they are going to be live streaming this.
Ah, excellent.
And also, they gave 2 months' notice.
That too? It's, that too, as opposed to 1 month, yes.
It's the second Firaxicon, and we get 2 months' notice. So next year, on the third Firaxicon, we get 3 months' notice.
Nope, it doubles 4 months' notice.
Oh, does it?
Sure.
Huh, exponential. Excellent.
Okay, so at some point, we're going to have more notice than notice.
Yeah.
Well, you'll just know that it's going to be at the same time the next year. You'll just know it. Even like 200 years from now.
Yeah.
On the Eventbrite page, there is a minor thing that I would like to see them address, and that's with regards to the start and end times. On the sidebar, where it says Saturday, October 3rd, from 10:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., well, I consider that the authoritative point, but if you start reading the description, they're like, well, it starts at 10 a.m. and ends at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
In the detail, they say they actually starts at 9 a.m. because there's an hour before any events get going that you can actually register.
Yeah, I usually have to do that.
10:30 to 9 is probably the honest timeline. Like, if you look at even stuff, professional sports games that are set to start at a time, they actually start like 10, 15 minutes later. So that's probably when everyone's actually going to be there doing stuff that's associated with Firaxis. So I think that's reasonable.
That's good that they have that registration being open an hour prior.
Very normal.
Did they do that last year, but they just didn't say it?
No, last year, because it was in the hotel, they set up registration the night before because everybody showed up the night before and hung out at the bar. It helped a bit. Most people actually showed up the morning of, so they still got slammed. But this time, since it's in the conference center, that's probably less of a ability to do that.
Unlike previously, you're not going to be able to sleep at the convention center. I enjoyed the comment. Trust us, we asked.
You can't just crash out from playing alongside the computer. Sorry, guys.
Aww. And that also means there's not going to be a 24-hour gameplay session like last year. That was one thing about the hotel is since it was open, they just let people play all night.
Making gamers wake up early on a Saturday? That's wrong.
Yeah, like they have to wake up for a podcast or something. Oh my gosh.
No, that's still a couple
Mackie
hours
wakes
later.
Up at the crack of 11 a.m. Okay, Mackie.
And yes, it just so happens that October 3rd falls on a Polycast episode recording day. So because it's live streamed, that will be our episode. No, I'm kidding. We won't do that.
Yeah-ha-ha. I will still be at Phyrexicon.
That's true. Oh, that's right. Imagine you are going to host the show on location and the rest of us get a break. Thanks. Awesome. Woohoo!
Woohoo! I could just walk around for 2 hours with the Periscope.
Hey, we should do that anyway.
So I should burn out my data plan. And I almost
just
did
steal
that.
Wi-Fi. Plan.
Well, no. The convention center will probably have Wi-Fi, but most convention centers don't let you have good enough transfer or data rate, whatever.
You're a VIP. They need to give you that.
I think we can convince Mackie to give up some internet cookies, and I'll give up some internet cookies too, and Phil will give up some internet cookies, and then your data plan's completely supplemented. Don't worry about
it. Don't worry, I'll send you cookies
they
over
take
the internet.
Cookies they for
they
payment?
Might have files embedded in them that will give access to your computer, but you can have the cookies.
Oh, okay.
Look at my Trojan horse. My horse is amazing.
Speaking of Trojan horses, there will be panels hosted by the Firaxis Game staff.
Yep.
I don't know why I made that segue at all.
Speaking of Trojan horse.
And most importantly, both Civvert and XCOM 2 will be on display.
I enjoy, yes, it says experience. It doesn't actually say play. You will experience.
No, you can check out Civ Beyond Earth, Rising Tide, and XCOM 2 prior to launch. Play board games with fellow fans and Firaxis Dev.
You can also get unique Firaxicon swag available only at this event and based on last year's asterisk, unless you win it in a contest afterwards. Firaxicon is a ticketed event with tickets costing $40 plus tax and fees. And of course, $40, that's not your real cost. Everyone knows this. There's this thing called travel. And accommodations, and some suggested accommodations are listed. I believe I heard that Firaxicon just happens to be happening the same weekend as at least one other major convention, so accommodation space is limited. Tickets are still available, but if you're thinking about going, I don't really think at this point ticketed might be your concern in terms of being able to get in, but unless you want to be sleeping in your car or traveling a very long way and get used to the public transit system, you may want to get on that, because it's going to be busy, from what I've heard.
Well, lots of hotels have already basically sold out. So, yeah, it's a bit of a pain to try and get a place downtown.
I do hope that there's more about the events coming forth, because the events are subject to change without notice, although we'll try as hard as possible to ensure they're as advertised. It would be nice if that information was known now. Sid's apparently going to be there, but we have no idea what it is that they're going to even be talking about. I understand that people, I wouldn't be necessarily listing people beyond the fact that Sid will be there. That's a good thing. But, like, what kind of panels? Are they going to be like last year? Are they not going to be like last year? I'm not saying we need to know that this will start at 1 o'clock and this will end at 2 o'clock, but what are some of the things you're going to be talking about?
Stuff. I'm assuming some will be related to BERT. Some will be related to XCOM. They came from QA last year, so maybe they'll do something along that line again.
Hosting the event in downtown Baltimore makes Firaxicon 2015 more amenable to travel and provides numerous dining and lodging options for those traveling out of town. So I take it that means as compared to where they had it last year, it's more amenable to travel?
Well, last year you had to go out to Barks-ish area, and there was a light rail to within a mile of the hotel, and then you could just jump off and walk the rest of the way. But at least with this year, it's right downtown in Baltimore, like right downtown. So going from the airport to the convention center is just straight and or hotel shuttles and or other stuff. So it's a wee bit easier to get there, unless you choose to rent a car, in which case it didn't really matter either way. But I think one of the primary reasons that it's now in the convention center rather than in the hotel was power. Last year, they expected that there was enough power for all the computers. And then after setting it all up, they realized, nope, too many computers, not enough power. So they had to do a lot of crazy wiring. So at least the convention center will be more likely to be guaranteed to have enough power and outlets and everything to have a lot of computers rolling at the same time.
Now, for those listening, you may be thinking, so Imagine is the only one on the panel that has experience at being at a Firaxicon. This is true. However, 9 years ago, there was the first Civilization convention, Polycon, in 2006 for Polton Civilization site, which I was one of the co-founders of. And I actually hadn't thought about that. Even after I read about Firaxicon 2015, I only thought of it as Imagine started talking about not having enough power. Not that that was an issue in 2006, because there weren't a lot of us there. I think there was about 20. But I just remember this spaghetti soup of wiring in order to be able to find an outlet for people to be able to plug computers in. And that was also hosted at a hotel. So I was like, I can appreciate, especially on the scale that they're talking about here. Poor Marcus here, Gagaxtrem. I don't think attending is really even something that you're able to consider.
Yeah, it'd be a bit complicated to get over there. And that being said, I'm not a big con person anyway. So I think I will enjoy the streams and all the videos I can see about that. And that's it for me. Would probably also be a bit costly, probably. A bit more costly than $40. And I think that's a bit above my available budget. I think I can invest that money somewhere else. Maybe Rising Tide.
Yeah, $40 for the con, a couple thousand to get there.
What could you do with a couple thousand dollars? A lot.
A new computer to play Civ better. Wero the Great noticed on one of Quill 18's LPs in resources from trade routes is now a thing. So he's rather surprised to see that trade route yielded petroleum and titanium. Is that going to be a regular thing now?
What I wonder the most about it is, do you leech these resources from the Civ, or do you basically generate new resources? Because if I remember correctly, you can send multiple trade routes to the same city. That could lead to some very interesting scenarios.
Yeah, I don't think they could make a mechanic where you leech it, because if that happens, it's just going to be war all the time.
Yeah, people go,
well, you could put in trade embargoes.
Yeah,
like, don't get my shiny petroleum.
Yeah, but I want your shiny petroleum, but then you can't have mine either.
I just feel like if there's a major downside to someone trading with you, if you have any option to block it, then you just block it.
Yeah, if it's a leech, yeah.
Yeah.
It would just all be automatic. And the developers tend not to do that sort of actual mechanic. They do love to have things show up from nothing.
Yeah. Plus, I think the idea was to encourage these trade routes to happen. So it in such a way that you would actively discourage it to the point where you're not going to see it very much is probably not the route they'll choose.
Yeah, but I mean, what it does is really it makes the international trade routes a lot more interesting. That's a good thing, because I almost exclusively use internal trade routes for my city when I'm playing Beyond Earth.
Yeah.
The problem with that is because all the calculations for what do you get from external trade routes is always the opposite of what you would want. Always you give them more than what you get. So what's the point?
Yeah, unless you have some really small, newly founded city somewhere at the edge of the empire, and then you can send from there.
Yeah, but they'd still send those to the capital for trade routes because you get more.
I mean, I think when Civilization Beyond Earth first came out, it was like, woo, external trade routes. Look at how awesome these are. And then a patch came out. And it kind of did a 180 on them. I don't know, if we got this diplomatic capital system, maybe that could be something that could tie in. It's like, well, yeah, for example, you might be getting, and actually just using the screenshot as an example, Quill is playing the North Sea Alliance. Once again, not that NSA. And it says he's going to get, from this potential trade row with Fortune from the American Reclamation Corporation, 8 energy and 4 science per turn, but Fortune would get 7 energy and 8 science per turn. And yes, you would apparently also gain +1 petroleum and +1 titanium, but is that really enough to be able to say that actually looks desirable as compared to some of the internal trade routes? Like, for example, if he traded with Dunkyle there, he'd get +11 production in Deep Castle.
Well, the question is, can you still trade resources outside of the trade routes, like via the diplomacy system?
Yeah, well, Supremacy King 2, the very first post after... the OP. Yes, the coming expansion Regentide removes strategic resources from diplomacy and makes them tradable via trade routes instead. So yes, they are removed from diplomacy. But yes, that will tie into the later thread. So basically, no more actual trading of strategic resources. You would actually have to send trade routes to get them.
Yeah, it seems to be more
and they
implicit.
Appear from nowhere.
Buzzing put in our chat, everything in BE so far has been generation from nothing. For example, espionage, like you steal energy or you steal beakers. So I'd assume it's generated from nothing. So perhaps that's why it's +1 petroleum and +1 titanium. So then the question becomes, under what conditions could it fact and perhaps be even more than that, especially if it comes from nothing? If it comes from nothing, if you wanted to be really trolly, you could say, well, it doesn't matter whether or not they have that resource or not if it's coming from nothing. But would there be a situation where you could actually get more than one? Or could you, in fact, have an external trade route where if you like, I have no problem you gaining 7 energy and +8 science, perhaps they're not interested in you getting petroleum and titanium. So under what conditions would that be that that wouldn't happen? Or, of course, you could just say, I want to do that, so then when I canceled the trade route and you now have a deficit.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, oh, I have absolutely no petroleum near me. Okay, I'm going to expand out 8 different new cities and send 8 trade routes, 1 from each, to your petroleum producing place. Now, all of a sudden, I have 8 petroleum based off your well that only gives 2.
Nah, I mean, if it comes out of nothing.
Yeah.
We have Gaia, the spirit of the Earth. I wonder if there's a spirit of whatever alien planet you're on that gets these out of nothing. Maybe that's where they come from.
Well, maybe it's just like the free market. Demand creates more resources being produced. He just gets his 2 or 4 petroleum from the Hex, but since you are interested and you send these trade routes over and maybe some people who help him getting more oil, then you get your +1 from the oil field.
Yeah, it could be like some of the places where there are resources, but it's normally too difficult to get to. But hey, if you're going to pay them to go get that.
Yeah, except that when you start talking game balance, and here we go negative. Woohoo! See? I started negative, not ended. Just wait for it. Effectively, gameplay-wise, you no longer need to fight for territory to get resources that you need for your empire. What you need to do now is just mass crap out trade routes to get the resources you need to destroy that other civ to then get the resources you need.
It's a counterpoint to that, though. If you're dependent on foreign trade routes to get resources that are of high strategic value, if someone cuts off that trade route and as a result the insufficient amount of resources screws over your units you use to build those, that's problematic.
Yeah, except that petroleum is used for orbital units. Orbital units are not automatically turfed if you run out of stuff. And if I'm building a bunch of lasers or TACnets or, you know, whatever actually needs the oil, then, oh well, now I use those to crush you. Thanks.
That's true. Unless they cut down the combat strength of the orbital units when you don't have the resources for them.
Or other such things.
But it's not perfect counterpoint, but some reason to still want to control the territory.
I don't know, because, I mean, maybe you don't choose to go fight those people, and it's like, well, normal game, you would want to get your cities in position to make sure you get the resource. Now it's, well, I don't feel like expanding, I'm just going to sit here and mass trade routes. But more importantly, I'll drop a bunch of useless cities that have nothing around it and use their one trade route to go get new resources. Now all of a sudden, that stupid ice city that has absolutely nothing around it can provide you with strategic resources.
Hmm. Well, but you pay a price for that. I mean, you get the science increase, you get the culture increase, and that's pretty significant.
No, it's not
drawback.
No,
for
it's
one
not.
Resource?
Depends on what you get it for and what you use it for and how many resources are getting pulled out of that. And well, since it's a crap city, the city is going to generate more science and energy for you than you give.
Yeah, that's true. Due to the inverse scaling, that might be a bit problematic. But still, if you found that city just to get this extra strategic resource, it's still sort of a decision that has a drawback. It's not a really just a gain more mechanic. And what I really like about the trade route idea is that the geography now is also somewhat important because, like, for example, in C5 or Base Beyond Earth, you could just trade resources across the globe without even seeing maybe most of the route where the trade would have to move the goods along. And now you have to create a trade route. You have to scout a path to the target location. You have to secure that path. Maybe we'll see a change to the Sonic Fence quest so that trade routes are no longer just alien immune and we have these corals in the sea that could have impact on the sea trade routes. So there might be some interesting update for the importance of the geography of the map. Like you want to explore more, you want to secure the trade routes. You maybe use your ocean cities as trade hubs because you can connect them easily to the other cities of the different civs.
Movable trade hubs.
Yeah. And carriers. Multipurpose. Yeah.
Multipurpose. I mean, yes, on that front, it does make more impact on the actual trade route stuff. Geography-wise, I think it's actually worse generally because you don't have the contention for space. But on the trade routes aspect of it, yeah, that makes it more important to protect them and figure that out. And yes, if they did not remove or adjust the immunity in the ultrasonic fence quest, then, well, that just makes it dumb. But you'd be able to do it.
So we can see the North Sea Alliance, we can see the American Reclamation Corporation, we can also see the Pan-Asian Cooperative, because this potential trade route that Quell would have had in this game, his capital, Deep Castle, would not gain any petroleum or titanium if he traded with the Pan-Asian Cooperative. So if he's thinking, for example, I need that titanium because I've gone purity and I need titanium, so I'm going to use that titanium to then go after the Pan-Asian Cooperative because the Pan-Asian Cooperative has titanium, then once I got the Pan-Asian Cooperative, then the American Reclamation Corporation says, hey, screw you, how dare you go squash somebody else, then it's like, oh, that's okay, I don't need your titanium anymore because your titanium helped me get titanium myself. Perhaps there's also the opportunity for some diplomacy to be going on there, that you want to be keeping really good relations with the American Reclamation Corporation in order to keep that titanium until such a time as you don't need it anymore because you couldn't settle some of your own.
Possibly.
That's a hope. I don't know if it's actually going to work out that in gameplay. Plus, there's also the question of you'd like to think that perhaps the American Reclamation Corporation at some point might somehow realize, oh, maybe not on the level of we should stop trading with you for the resource. I think that's maybe asking a little bit too much of the AI. But hey, yeah, we got this trade route with you, but you went and declared on the Pan-Asian Cooperative afterwards. And maybe we're not friends with them, but we've got some early concerns about your warmongering. And then it's like, oh, in other words, am I going to be able to get rid of the Pan-Asian Cooperative or get the Pan-Asian Cooperative cities that have titanium before it gets cut off from the American Reclamation Corporation? I'm trying to look at it as a glass half full as opposed to half empty, but boy, oh boy, I don't know.
At least it's much harder to abuse the AI and just buy all the titanium and xenomass or whatever you need and then build what you want and cancel the deals when they run out. I mean, now you have to commit to the trade route, and it's a bigger commitment than just clicking through the diplomacy screen and bribing the AI with, like, 5 energy per turn or 2 of my fire exile that I never will need anyway.
Yeah, that's the flip side to this change, and I'm not sure if people are quite agreed yet on whether or not it's good. I think most people are assuming it's a little better than before. Effectively, yes, if it's no longer part of diplomacy to trade strategic resources, you can no longer generate money from selling off all those resources you don't need and basically using the AI as a bank, which in theory also means the early game slows down a little bit for people who play like that because you can't get a lot of extra cash. So that could be considered a good thing. And see, we did actually finish that on a positives.
One of those tactics that was so strong that you would just do it all the time if you wanted to optimize. So I don't know. I don't have a problem with losing that.
Yeah, I always found it a bit cheesy to use that, and even in C5 to sell your luxuries to the AI when it doesn't really need them.
I don't care about the cheese factor, but it's a micro step. And not only is it a micro step, but it's one that there's really not much downside to using in the overwhelming majority of cases. It's almost to the point of always doing it, and I don't like always do anything anything that's like, okay, this option is one you should always do if you're playing optimally, that bothers me.
Yeah, it's about choice, isn't it? You want choice. Yeah. You have to make hard
If you don't need
decisions.
To apply strategy, why is that there? You know, it's an extra click step that has no real value.
Yes.
We want this happy medium between always doing and never doing.
Yes.
So you want to feel like you're making an informed decision. Like, you don't want it just to be a completely, you know, shot in the dark, because that's not strategy either.
Yeah.
But at the same time, don't want it to be copy-paste.
Yeah, anything that's always never or always, always usually causes problems.
I mean, in the other extreme version, if we just wanted rolls of the dice, I'd go play Risk. Yeah.
I'm playing in the card game war.
And I'm sure some of our listeners are thinking, gee, you guys are talking about this move of strategic resources to trading from diplomacy in the single-player context. What about multiplayer context? All right, let's talk about the multiplayer context. Trade routes. All right.
Well, it'd be like we do right now with Civ 5, where we always trade each other luxuries to help with happiness, and now we'll just be able to trade each other some other stuff to help with happiness.
That's co-op MP.
In a cooperative context.
Well, yes. Multiplayer.
And I suppose maybe in a competitive context, you might be looking at internal trade routes.
Oh, absolutely. Internal trade routes are great.
But we're talking external, so
yeah. You might get it in collusion dogpile scenarios. If one player is looking sufficiently strong relative to others, I can envision sometimes players who are trying to work against that player essentially allowing trade routes between each other as a way to narrow the gap.
Or perhaps if you're on teams in multiplayer as well.
Oh, yeah, well, of course, then. But
well, then you'll always be doing it, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking about changes to war.
Right. This is not the only change that we have seen. The user Carl0413 noticed that the Firaxis team has introduced another new mechanic into diplomacy and the good old military conquest, the war score mechanic.
Why does this sound familiar? Where have I heard this before?
We talked about this very briefly on the last episode, yes.
And I may or may not have 3,000 hours in the game with war score.
Is it Paradox related?
Maybe.
Might be.
All right, Victoria 2.
Oh. Here I was thinking it was Crusader Kings.
Not EU4?
No. Like every game?
Well, I guess since EU4 had to steal the tall versus wide thing, Firaxis had to try and steal something back.
Mm.
And I think they got the better of the deal here, because tall versus wide is garbage.
Garbage. Seriously, tall versus wide in EU4 is an idiotic concept. Okay,
yes.
So that was our negative. Let's talk about the positive.
At least now we're going to know exactly where we stand.
I think it depends on how it's tuned. Like, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with a war score concept. If you're really trashing somebody, then you could just kill them completely. So does this become useful, or do you just take what you want physically, as in you wreck them for their cities and then make them give you some money and resources, or do you just kill them outright?
I don't know. Whenever I see the word score and Civ together, I do have this knee-jerk reaction that may not necessarily be positive.
It has word war next to it, so it's probably better than the usual score.
Yeah. The concept is, if you've never heard of it, both sides get points during the war. I'm guessing killing units and taking cities count as points. Depending on the differential between those two, you get the ability to command stuff for peace. How well that's tuned is going to be very important. Because before, you could sit there and kill 100 AI units and they're like, nope, no peace, ever. Whereas if you actually have this sort of mechanic, you could wipe out their army 50 times and then they'd have to actually sort of make peace because clearly one-sided and clearly
Well, they
failed.
Could force it on you in theory.
Yeah, that too.
But, it does bring back some thoughts along the lines of, okay, what if I just sit here and let the DDAI shred its forces on my military over and over again until I've killed, 50 units, and then I can take everything but their capital or something.
Yeah.
So you can go off the deep end in both directions. You could make it a worthless mechanic where, in practice, it's not applied at all. Or you could make it the overwhelming dominant factor at war and just take everyone's cities using war score.
Yeah, well, the problem with the mechanic inherited from Civ 5 was that if you did not have units surrounding an AI city, it wouldn't think it was threatened. But if you took that city, it would really not think it's not threatened. And it constantly like, well, that's not my city anymore. So I don't know what you're talking about. At least with this concept, possibly if you take the city, it will be part of the war score and they'll be like, oh, that actually is important that I lost cities.
Yeah.
But what I'm hoping is even if you do have the, okay, we're fighting out in the middle. I kill, say, 50 of your units because you just refuse to shut up. I don't even threaten your city. I'm not even in your zone. You shouldn't be able to start asking for a ton of cities. Like, there should be some basis in that mechanic that if you are taking cities, then maybe you can take more versus just, oh, I killed a lot of units. So that basically just means that I can force peace and maybe get some energy or other stuff off you. And maybe even one city at most, if it's a small one.
That would bring a much needed qualitative element to the quantitative. In other words, my army is really powerful. It's twice as powerful as yours. But your army's on the other side of the planet. So are you really threatening me just beyond words?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the mechanic can add a lot of clarity to the whole war behavior of the AI, because we all know these deals where the AI knocks at your door and is like, hey, want to make peace? I want all your cities except your capital and all your gold. And I'm like, oh, but you haven't killed a single unit from me yet. You haven't invaded my territory. And I don't understand. What? Yeah, that's...
Yeah, on what planet do you think that's acceptable terms?
Yeah, it's like, at least send something to me so I can kill it.
War score mechanic has to get tuned to prevent stuff like that, because Europa Universalis 3 had the same problem. You had like a minor nation approaching you, hey, want to make peace with me? You only have to release 4 small nations as France and give me all your gold and we're good. And basically the same situation. And it needs some AI tuning and behavior tuning, and then you can make a meaningful mechanic. It needs balancing, but in general, I think it's a really good idea. It's not bad to borrow stuff from other games.
Yeah, now this is definitely going to fix the bad part of war in the Civ type series games, especially on higher difficulty. Like, I got 1 million units, so what? Yes, there's questions about, does the AI understand that it shouldn't start a war if it can't do anything?
Well, that's just an AI problem in general, isn't it?
Yeah, but then the AI thinks it'll automatically win. It stops looking at its own army and starts looking at how is that army doing? And if it's 0-0 after like some number of turns, it should really just say, okay, well, that was stupid. Let's stop fighting.
That may also help with the, how come that civilization just declared war on me? They're on the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
How are you getting here? Magic?
You know.
But there's another important component we haven't yet talked about. And I think one user voiced that, Josephias said, I'm worried about the lack of flexibility and barging capacity of the new diplomatic systems. And all I've seen is this white peace option, I think, in the Let's Play. So we would have to think about what are our peace options that we have with the war score system. Can we demand cities? Can we demand resources, gold? I think it's also important what we can select as our peace options to make use of the war score.
I guess. I don't think that's such a big concern, though, because at the end of the day, you can just take all their cities still. So, I mean, what are they restricting? I mean, if they're restricting you from demanding money or resources, then yeah, it's a problem, but I don't anticipate that being the case. I don't see that as a big potential issue at all. Now, the tuning of it, yes. I mean, if you make it pointless, then that's not good. But in terms of demand flexibility, and there's very little now anyway. So, like, I don't see that being constrained in a material fashion.
I can kind of understand where that comment is coming from, though. I'm thinking more in the context of Civilization V, which, of course, Civilization Beyond Earth, at least Vanilla, took a lot from, or in some cases took away from, where you'd be in a peace treaty situation, and you're trying to give something. I wish I could remember, maybe someone could remember for me, but it says, oh, sorry, you can't actually include that as part of peace terms. You would have to then get peace and then have a separate deal for that particular thing.
What was that?
Yeah, what was that? Trying to remember.
Open borders?
I don't think it's open borders I'm thinking of specifically, but it's kind of one of those things where, why do I have to have peace first and then enter into a separate agreement for it?
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say, what are we going to be able to select with regards to war score?
Maybe it was a research agreement.
We demand a research agreement for peace.
Yeah.
Well, that would actually get me to wage war.
If that's possible. I mean, it could work. Like,
yeah, it just sounds silly.
It does sound silly.
I'm going to beat you down so you research with me. Come here.
Possible.
I don't know. I was kind of thinking more in the perspective of, like, I'm going to freaking lose this war if I don't do something. I don't want them to take my city. So here, how about we get a research agreement, because you're going to be better off with it than me in the sense of the research agreement, but I still stay alive. Thank you.
Oh, like a one-sided one? That's not a bad idea, actually.
Yes.
Like,
I'll
work.
Give you research to not kill me.
Yeah.
Well, again,
you're like
you
extorting
could
science.
Use that.
It's like extorting gold. You're extorting beakers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But can't you already do that in Beyond Earth? I mean, beakers are tradable via diplomacy, so you can demand them in a peace offer, can't you?
I guess it depends on what they do. If they are removing most of the trading system, then that will be a big question here. Can't barter anymore, which we'll get to in the next topic, but the cell seems to be connected anyways. Can you make peace? Because the peace screen was the same as the barter screen. And if you're not bartering, does that mean that they also change the peace deals? Like your war score determines what you get and it just tells you? Because that would be stupid.
Yeah, and I think that was the concern in the post I quoted, because we might be restricted in diplomacy by the war score system because we haven't seen anything except for the white piece yet.
Yeah, because he goes on to say, like, it feels like a replacement for a more flashy but less deep system. It feels like if I ask a plumber to fix the piping on my house to avoid leaks and he removes it fully and changes it to a top-notch hermetically closed water tank in the garage with equally most modern hermetically closed buckets to carry the water to the kitchen or the bathroom. Yes, the leaks are gone, but the system I wanted to correct too is also gone.
Yeah.
So is it one step forward, two steps back?
Maybe.
I don't know if the mechanic is finished yet or not. Probably not, but at the same time, a little more information would be helpful to have an idea of what can and cannot be included.
That's true. Although if it's not fleshed out yet on their end, then giving us a lot of information would probably be counterproductive because it's not finalized, and then there'd be expectations about it that would not be consistent with what comes out. So I can understand not going into too much detail until it's more solid. Just war and peace deals right now and in Civ games prior for a while have been sufficiently like lackluster in my mind that you'd have to botch this pretty badly to make it much worse.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's such a huge detriment to gameplay that it makes Civ fun to play, but as a mechanic, it can be improved so much, and it's not at such a state where it's so strong already that I feel like they're more likely than not to improve it in this case.
As is every instance of the war score mechanic we've seen, Gaga was saying, you know, it's white piece. We're not seeing examples of what we are going to be able to trade as opposed to not. Like, there's just no information there. So now it's completely in a vacuum and it's just wild speculation. Well, certainly they must have an idea of something, maybe not everything that you can get in a peace deal, but something to help us fill in some of these blanks.
Well, keeping in mind that people have been using like alpha or beta builds. So it could be that the AI's war score peace treaty thresholds are set too high, and then white piece is too much. That could just be a pure balance number thing.
Yeah, that might be the case, right. I mean, you would have to teach the AI how to use the system anyway, so if that's not done properly yet, there's no reason to add these items to the negotiation table anyway.
Civ 5, the way the peace deals went, they had set levels, and once you get up to a certain level, you get some stuff. But the AI doesn't know how to negotiate. You might be able to get, say, start getting cities in peace deals, and it'll say, okay, you can have these cities. But maybe you want all their resources and other stuff, put those in with a couple less cities, and then you say, how about this? And it's like, no, you can only have all these cities.
So yeah, I remember such a situation.
Improving that by deleting it and replacing it with a war score mechanic seems like not a bad concept.
Yeah, it might be easier for the AI to understand by giving things a numerical value.
Yeah.
So you have earned, you can buy this much stuff in a peace deal, and the cities are worth a big amount, and these other things you want are worth a smaller amount. You can get a bunch of those small things as opposed to taking the cities. And it will understand that is an equivalent.
Math is easier if things are itemized.
Yes. See, we're being positive.
I don't care about being positive. I'm an evil troll.
You're positive about being an evil troll, then?
Very well.
Now, of course, the weighting of those numbers, I'm sure, will cause all sorts of consternation. So on the actual topic that we keep relating to, because this is all basically the same lead up to the question of where's the actual diplomacy?
Yes,
the segue of segues.
Like, the entire Polycast episode today has been a segue towards this question. Where is the freaking diplomacy?
It's where you last left it. Do you not remember?
Yeah, exactly. So Good Samaritan pops up. So you can call him a cynical prick if you want. Sure, why not? Just for feels. But Asher's first wave of excitement about Rising Tide's new features died down. He's becoming more skeptical again. So all the talk about the new diplo system, there's no diplomacy. And that's correct because you now have traits that you can make and you can improve and people can buy services from you. But as he's pointing out, that's not called diplomacy. That's called a virtue system that has more interesting dynamics to it with other people. There is no trading directly. That's gone. All the bargaining gone because that's now part of the trade route. But that's not diplomacy. There's no way to bribe others into war. There's no way to bribe others into peace. There's no options to actually influence other civs' behaviors, i.e., you're being mean. Why can I no longer denounce you? There's no diplomacy. So that's what this whole episode is about. See, we were nice before. Now I have to start getting a finger shaking, wagging. So effectively, the real question comes down to, did they really just delete the whole diplomacy? Because even though the AIs will pop up and go, oh, you're building stuff that I like, so here's a little respect. Or, ooh, you got a big military, here's a little fear. Or, you don't feed your population, I don't respect you enough. That's not diplomacy at all, in even any sense of the word. So the question came down to, where is it? And no one has an answer. There is very much a big hole in the game now, is that the word diplomacy is not actually getting used in-game because there is none. Have fun with that.
Well, the question would be, is it still a work in progress, or is it not? Well, I mean, it's an early version.
No, because they actually had videos about the new diplomacy system and with the producers.
Still a work in progress. They've even said it. I don't know if they always remember at the start of their live streams, but especially Dave Hinkle, the 2K community manager, tries to bring up, just remember, this is still a work in progress. So some of the things you see, especially some of the bugs, etc., don't expect them to be there. It's still working on it. So it's still being fleshed out in terms of the specifics. The mechanics are there. The mechanics that we know about, they're going to be there some way or to other. And I think it's fair to say with diplomacy, where is the diplomacy right now? Collecting dust on the ground, Civilization Beyond Earth.
To be fair, I don't know if I would quantify the previous system as actually a diplomacy system either.
Yeah, did we even have diplomacy in Beyond Earth?
Yeah, the bartering was not diplomacy. That was just called get whatever you could out of the AI. The only thing that might actually be related to diplomacy is calling somebody, saying that you're neutral or cooperative or ally with somebody else, and whether or not that actually exists. Although that's based on the respect and fear traits, so it's not really even diplomacy anymore. Especially in multiplayer, you'll just say, oh, well, we're going to be allies. No, be done with it. I don't respect you and I don't fear you, but I want your stuff, so shut up.
I think what we have seen is more like we have the diplomatic relation levels. Not really diplomacy behind it, except for the services.
Yeah, and this is a callback to the last episode, which Dan talked about, which was when we talked about all those different ways to possibly make a diplomacy system happen. That's closer to a diplomacy system than what we see right now. And I don't think Civ 5 really had one either, per se. But the ability to not just influence other Civs' behaviors, to actually work with other Civs, or be more focused on saying, well, I don't like the fact that you just nuked out Shaka.
But it involved using nukes.
But maybe somebody doesn't like nukes. And then you say very specifically, I don't like you using nukes.
That's wrong.
Yeah, well, then you nuke them. And
okay.
Diplomacy.
I got you.
Well, I was about to say, I would actually like to see it that what other civs do influence my behavior. Like an AI would influence my behavior beyond just, oh, you don't like newts, so therefore I'm going to modify my behavior and get rid of you.
Yeah, no, but actual behavioral modification. So say, please stop settling towards me. Even just saying that, does that exist anymore?
And if it does, if they can say it, so should we be able to.
Well, yes, that's called actually implementing a diplomacy system. That's actually called implementing it. But yeah,
there's nothing more annoying then these AIs popping up on turn 3. Please stop settling near my cities. I just landed my space capital here. What do you want from me? What do you want from me?
Yes.
Well, you did settle near them, didn't you?
We couldn't see you down there. Broadcast a better signal next time. Oh my gosh.
Seriously. If you forward settle them and they say, hey, stop doing that, and then all of a sudden you forward settle again, wouldn't that drop their respect and make it harder to be friendly with them? But
ideally,
doesn't exist at the moment that we can tell. And so if all those diplomatic stuff doesn't exist and the AI is, say, popping up saying, oh, I like your food output, and that's the thing that modifies respect or fear, is just random stat-based stuff where you don't actually have to do anything, then it basically makes single-player diplomacy exactly like multiplayer free-for-all diplomacy, i.e. there is none.
You're not generating enough food and hammers.
Yeah, seriously.
So I'm going to kill you because I know you're weak, but there's your MP diplomacy.
Yep. Actually, there is a question. How would you adjust fear and respect in multiplayer anyways? Like, is there a button to go, I respect you more? No, there's probably not.
That's a good question, actually.
You can have a little dialogue box at the bottom right that lets you pick which player you think everyone else should dogpile.
Yeah, it's like, please all dogpile that person.
I think very much in multiplayer, the fear and respect aspects come through in actions quite clearly.
Yeah, and spoken language at times.
Yeah, but it's going to be more of a, okay, I'm just going to delete your stuff. Like, you can say in multiplayer, I am going to kill you now. Stop settling next to me. Is that going to be weird that multiplayer actually has diplomacy when single player doesn't, when people used to complain that multiplayer had none?
Well, I guess it depends. Someone saying that, does that actually get you to change what you're doing in-game?
Well, it might, depending on if they have nukes or not.
It might, but it's true because it's been done that way. It's changing gameplay, but it's not, strictly speaking, represented in gameplay.
Well, yeah, it's all meta-diplomacy.
Yeah.
Or backdoor diplomacy.
All right, so I think we've basically been plenty negative about that.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that covers our negativity for the day.
We're like
just
electrons,
keep harping
guys.
On.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
So we should get out of here on a high note, is what you're saying?
Oh, you want to get high? Okay.
Well, no, she was advocating singing earlier, so perhaps she meant it that way.
She's so high. High above me.
Oh, that is a high note. I don't want to try to sing that crap.
No way. I don't want to hear you guys try to sing that. Ow, 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 my ears already, just thinking about it.
I mean, you could deliberately lower it an octave, but then it just sounds weird.
Foot loose and fancy free.
Ah! And the Jackie, end it.
Yes. This has been episode 2.
Of the sing-off.
Shush.
Look, a footloose and fancy free. That's appropriate for the clothing. Come on.
Show you footloose.
Yes, foot's going to get loose into your rear. Okay. Hello.
Hello. Are you there?
Hey.
Oh, hi.
Listen.
Over.
This has been episode 235 of Polycast. I'm joined by the usual crew of crazies, including Dan Q.
Retroactively perfect.
The Minion team.
It's mostly just my armies that are loose.
Mad Jin.
O-L-L-E-J.
And our guest, Gaga Extreme.
I prepared exclusive Xenoswarms this morning.
Ooh, Xenoswarms.
Best guide.
It was fun. And if you want me back, I'm ready. Just give me a call, and I'll be there. Whatever you need me.
I'll be there.
No.
Sorry, I didn't even know that song.
That's just it. You just don't know what's a prompt with these guys.
Literally everything is a prompt at this point.
Yeah, give or take, but close
trigger
enough.
Trigger warning.
Oh, Mackie size, sweet.
Perfect.
Got an email. Justin, he said, I have played Civ for almost 20 years and have just stumbled onto your podcast. It is awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Mackie started it. Michelle.
She did.
Mackie has authorized all singing today.
It's because I haven't had enough caffeine yet to realize what I was doing.
What's it? It's just, it's so good.
Okay, no.
We have been adequately negative.
Can we end on a positive note?
Well, I like how Mackie, her brain just went there. That's great.
Around here, you're surprised my brain went there.
Eyes up here, Mackie. Eyes up.
What?
Oh, my.
Recorded August 8th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.